Hello and welcome to the Norfolk Folklore Society. I'm Shifra.
I'm Stacia.
And today we're going to be talking about a witch from East Dereham.
In the 1940s.
Oh, you blew my little story.
Do you want to start again?
No, we'll leave it in. It's
okay.
fine.
Oh, ruining things for you for nine years
I'd
and
tweaked
plus.
your work, obviously, because I tweaked it isn't as good, but I tweaked it so it was a little bit of suspense for people. But Stacia's
Okay,
ruined it,
right. Forget
everyone.
I just
So,
said that. So from the 1740s.
just an East Dereham witch. Anyway, before we get started, how are you? We
Yeah,
were a bit,
good,
we had a
thank you.
little, we missed last month, but
We had an
life
Easter break,
happens.
didn't we? Where you did something far more exciting than I did. I went to Cambridge and you went to
New York, which was lovely. And
oh,
I shared a
lovely.
little bit about it in our last newsletter because that happened, like that went out like the day after I got home or something. So I was trying to write my little intro thing with jet lag. So that was fun. There you go.
I think I've written a few in advance, so I'm a bit ahead. Well, am I still ahead? I don't know.
Yes,
But
you are. Yeah.
If you haven't signed up to our newsletter, please do.
Yeah, you should do because it's
You
quite
really should do.
People
Because
say
it's free.
people say it's nice and that they
It
really
is
enjoy
nice.
getting it.
It's
So
nice. There are different stories in there, although I won't lie, we probably will reuse them at another point. But
yeah.
there's stories, there's I will get back to what's on. We had a full month off really last month. But I will get back on the what's on, especially as I saw a really good event today and I thought, oh, I should put that in the what's on. And I will. But
There is a
yeah,
really
and
good
we've
event coming up, isn't there?
there's a re oh gosh, you're good.
That was
There's a
good.
really, really good. Could you tell me more about the really good event that's happening in May?
Which no one can come to because it's sold
Which
out.
nobody can come to because how fast did it sell out?
This is our event for the Norfolk and Norwich Festival with Laura Cannell. And we're talking about Dark Tales of the Guildhall. So we've been doing lots of research. It's really hard, like with the research, because when we talk, I want to talk to you about it, but like
I
we've got
know.
to like try and not discuss
Got to
it too
preserve the
much.
magic, darling. We've got to keep the magic going, and
Yeah.
that's not speaking about the Dark Guildhall.
Yeah,
And
but it
also,
sold out in like, I think like,
7 minutes.
I thought 7 minutes, but someone else said that they tried and it was like 3 minutes or something.
I'm taking
So,
3 minutes then.
yeah, but
We were the. I know we were the fastest selling out event.
that's good. And Laura said that they have a waiting list as well. So,
of course they do.
but we've been working really hard. Like, actually, I've been going through a bit of a creative funk. Is that the right word? Like a bit of a low. So I'm forcing myself to do stuff. So I drew that. I don't know if you saw on if people saw on Instagram. I drew that like the Norfolk Wolf. I see anything. And then I'm making something for May Day, which I've not told you about.
Are you? Is it a
Yeah.
full maypole that we can dance around?
I'm hoping it's going to be finished in time.
Oh,
But
my
so
word.
I'm making something quite cool. I think it's quite cool.
Will I
I
get
don't
to
know.
see it?
Yeah, definitely. It'll probably end up in your house because
Oh,
I'm going to
good.
have room for it.
Amazing. In the Norfolk Folklore Chamber
Yeah.
of Delights.
But also for the festival station, I've been working on like a really cool, like little exclusive thing.
Yeah.
So that's been quite fun. So that's all those things that have kind of been getting my creative
Although,
juices going.
spoiler, if you want the exclusive thing, you are going to need to bring some money.
Yeah, we are actually making people pay for something. Badges will still be free.
Yes. And if presumably if there are any left over after we've done it, then mere mortals who do not have the golden ticket will be able to buy one too.
Yeah. That's what I thought. So it will be like, yeah, there'll only be a limited number of them. But hopefully.
Actually, super exciting to make yourself research a building that is so part of Norwich's history that you kind of take it for granted, don't you?
Yeah, like the amount of times we just walk past it
I
without
know.
even like
Yeah.
thinking. So
Yeah.
it's been really interesting. And I found some interesting bit. I mean, I've still got quite a lot of research to do. But when this goes out, we'll still have like 2 weeks. So yeah, should be fine.
So we are in the Guildhall kind of podcasting, basically, aren't we? As if it's our house, which of course it really should be.
Yeah.
House. So it's going to be fun. And if you can't
I like
come,
that you say
then
our house, it makes it sound like we live together.
Well, you know, in a Norfolk folklore kind of sense, I'm saying, you know, when we break free of
our house
lives, and we can frolic as the Folklore Society. But if you can't come, we are podcasting it. We may do more in the future.
Yeah, I guess we'll see how it goes. If it's terrible, then we'll never speak of it again.
It's not going to be terrible. It's going to be amazing. Laura will be providing music behind
us. Which is so exciting. Like,
it
I love
very
the
exciting.
Idea of having...
Super atmospheric.
Yeah.
I may provide some music for you in this episode if you're really lucky. Not as good, but I did practice. But we'll see if we come to that in a natural way. We're going to have to now, aren't we?
Yeah, you've like built it in. We're going to have to.
I've built it in.
So,
okay,
should we get on with the story?
Well, actually,
two things I wanted to mention. I've seen some like really cool random folklore-y spooky things in like popular media recently, and it's like places I wasn't expecting it. So I've been watching The Dead Boy Detectives. I don't know if you've seen that on Netflix. So that's based on a Neil Gaiman. And I used to get the comics for that and I really liked it. And one of my favourite illustrators used to illustrate it. Anyway, they mentioned the Stone Tape Theory. And I was like,
Did they?
Stone Tape Theory? In Dead Boy Detectives? And then I was watching Bob's Burgers. There was a whole episode around an apple orchard and a ritual for the gods, and then it had Mary Lloyd's in.
Oh my god.
I was like,
I tell you
I
what, they are
into a alternate universe. What is happening?
Genuinely,
it, so cool.
it is coming in, isn't it? I mean, we've been banging this drum since we were little and we were scaring ourselves witless with books when we were tiny and watching inappropriate things on telly. And then it's taken the world
now
a long
it's in
time,
Bob's Burgers.
It?
I mean, I love Bob's Burgers, so I was very happy about that. In fact,
okay.
We're having burgers
maybe,
for lunch
maybe
today.
Maybe this should be a piece we should stick into, but kind of random folklore.
Yeah, that's a really good idea. So we can keep an eye out
of
for
the month. Because it does, you're right. Sometimes you're kind of blindsided, aren't you? I was watching some awful murder mystery thing the other day, and suddenly someone's theory was involving a piece. And I was like, what? A bit of bizarre folklore, and you're kind of like, okay, so it's clearly it's coming in, isn't it?
Yeah, and it's quite fun to spot it, isn't it, when you're like, oh
yes. Do let us know if you have random folklore
and we'll give
in
it
the
a mention
wild
and give you a little shout out.
Yeah,
so let's actually talk about our podcast story today, shall we?
Yes, they might have forgotten when it is now.
Yeah,
it's fine.
Oh yeah. Okay, I'm gonna start reading. It was on paper, a tedious neighbour dispute from East Dereham that had got out of hand and ended up in court. One neighbour had been assaulted by the other. The accused's defence was the man who had lashed out had been subject to witchcraft for 5 years. A bold claim. You might expect this case to be from the 17th century. However,
do you?
In January 1941... Mrs. Malvina Spinks and her neighbour appeared at court in Dereham in regard to an assault which had taken place on Christmas Eve 1940. The accused was war pensioner Gordon Sutton, who was said to have rushed at Mrs. Spinks in her garden before striking her twice. In his defence, Sutton pleaded not guilty and claimed that he was a victim of a prolonged campaign of witchcraft which had lasted for years. He said, a witch has been in the witness box. Many a time has she tied a bunch of flowers on my front gate. Oh, excuse me.
Oh dear, you've been bewitched by Mrs. Spinks.
Many a time has she tied a bunch of flowers on my gate and I have thrown them away. You know what is going back to, you know that is going back to the witchcraft of the Dark Ages. I dare not tell you half the terrible things she has done to me. I have been tortured for 5 years. Mrs. Spinks emphatically denied that she had been practising witchcraft. Somewhat strangely, both Mr. Sutton and Mrs. Spinks were bound over to keep the peace, a court order intended to keep a person out of trouble failing which they would be required to pay a specified amount of money. So perhaps the court did take the witchcraft claim with more than a pinch of salt. I want him to tell us, like, sorry, what are you going to say?
I was just going to say really early on that I went to school with someone called Sphinx.
Oh.
And you remember in the olden days when people would completely randomly ask you, like, have fights with you? I remember once we were walking across the PE field, which was not my natural habitat. Although I did play hockey and I played for my school. But we walked across and she just came over to me and said, "Do you want to fight tonight?" And I said, "No, not really. No."
Was this your friend?
No, I didn't like her. She said, "Do you want to fight?" And I said, "No, not really." And I said, "Why would you want to?" And she went, "Well, I'm just saying." And then walked off. That was that. I wasn't going to fight anybody. I've never laid a finger upon anybody.
I punched a bully once.
Did you?
Yeah, because... Oh, no. Oh, no, hang on. He punched me.
That is just saying that's a completely different story. That's not the same. That's you being bullied.
I was actually being a hero. So he was picking on my little sister.
Oh.
So I went after him and had a massive go at him. At which point he punched me in the eye.
Oh no. Was he called Spring?
Near the Venny, which was the adventure playground in Runcorn. Down the Venny. Oh. He punched me because I was standing up with my little sister.
Well done for looking after little people.
I know. There you go. Anyway.
Sorry, back to the real story.
We haven't spoken for a little while, so
it's been a while. Yeah. This could be quite random.
Yeah, he said. So in the story, like, he's like, "Oh, I dare not tell you half the terrible things that she has done to me." It's like, but please do tell us.
What please else do. Has she done?
Because
I have to say, if someone ties flowers to my gate, I'm not taking that as a bad thing. I'm taking them in.
This was like the absolute first thing that really struck me about this story. Having some knowledge of witchy shenanigans,
dark arts,
like that seems like a positive thing to me, because flowers often have, like, obviously flowers have loads of different correspondences, and like it would be really interesting to know what flowers she has had put in the bunches, because that would tell us a lot about what she was trying to do.
At least it was a wreath, do you know what I mean? With R.I.P. written out.
Yeah, so that in, is...
incarnations.
That was something I was, like, looking into, is, like, what flowers could it have been that had negative, like, implications? And one of the things I found was if the flowers were, like, dead or, like, decaying, then that could symbolise... you know, some kind of negative thing. But I also found out that it's a mob tactic. So maybe Miss Malvina Sphinx was in the mob.
Wow.
And it was like they'd put flowers on, like, possibly actually like wreaths and things to represent your coming funeral.
Oh, nice.
Which is quite harsh. But I had a little look into some flowers, and I was thinking in the 1940s, I guess, I don't really know, but what access to flowers might have been, you just pick what, I mean, it was during the Second World War, so probably you would just pick whatever you had. So I don't know how many of these flowers are like naturally occurring, but carnations can symbolize rejection, disappointment, and disdain. Narcissus, so that's daffodils, right? Narcissus,
yeah, little ones, kind of mini ones.
Yeah, they're really cute, those, aren't they?
Yeah, they are really nice.
They can be if you want to curse egocentric and disrespectful people, but that would be very seasonal, so he'd only probably get those flowers in like February, March.
I feel the detail in this is lacking, both from the core reporter who's done a poor job, and the legal team who've also done a poor job, and Mrs. Sphinx and
it's like they didn't want to talk about it at all, because this little piece in the paper, and I did look in the newspaper archives, as I'm sure you did as well. It is just this, isn't it? There's nothing else, like nothing else anywhere. So no one talks about any.
I mean, you kind of feel that on the face of it, the actual victim here is her, because he's knocked her over. And I wondered if this kind of reflects, you know, the fact that in it, I mean, in the, could you just knock an old a lady over and get away with that? Clearly, yes. You know, was provocation enough to knock someone over? Because it wouldn't be now. It just seemed like a bit of chauvinism. I mean, you can't also know what state he was in.
No.
The very fact they mentioned that he was a, you know, a war pensioner, that that's the, he was in the First World War. So we all know that that was a brutal kind of war to live in. And that a lot of people came back home completely ruined, didn't they? So, I mean, there's all that to contest with, isn't there? Was he, in fact, suffering mental health issues? Was he, in fact, still suffering from kind of flashbacks or from all sorts of things? It's interesting that they bound both over to keep the peace.
I'd never heard this term before. I didn't know what that meant at all.
Yeah, so basically they just said, behave yourselves, go away, behave yourselves, stop your row. And you know, to kind of just keep you out of trouble, and they had to pay money for the costs. But on paper, I would say that this is something that she does. I mean, if they aren't accepting, if they're basically saying, which you'd imagine they would have, although they didn't, that witchcraft is not a thing and he's mad, and you know, and this would have just been him being bound over. But they obviously did think that she had a case to answer.
But it feels like this, there's so many hints at a bigger story, isn't there?
Yeah.
Like, if this has been going on for 5 years, I would imagine there's probably a bit of back and forth. They probably just didn't like each other and were like, you can just imagine them being like neighbors who just, you know, just don't get on with each other.
A big bold move to take that from she's an annoying old cow, he's a miserable old git, to she is invoking Satan and is practicing the dark arts, isn't it?
I did read that spilling the blood of the witch would break a curse. So if he felt like that was the, if he felt like she had cursed him, although I don't know if it actually specifically says that. Does it actually say
did he feel he'd been cursed? No, it didn't say.
But it does make you just wonder, like,
witchcraft,
if he felt like that would, and it's obviously not justifying it at all, if he felt like that would put an end to it. We assume that they did go about their business in a peaceful way, because there's no follow-ups to say, oh, they were in court again because they broke their binding, which sounds magical in itself,
doesn't it? This case in 41 was really I thought it might have been for a tiny while, but not long, the last witchcraft trial. It was definitely in Norfolk the last, and in the East. But there were ones later on, weren't there? There was Helen Duncan.
Yeah, so I did read a little bit into Helen Duncan, which she sounded like a very interesting lady.
Yes.
So she was the last person to be imprisoned under the 1735 Witchcraft Act.
Yeah.
So that's like, as if they still had like the Witchcraft Act. And then after
It was when they repealed the one that basically allowed Hopkinson and everybody else to just kind of kill people randomly. And it actually then became illegal to say that somebody was a witch, but they could still be tried for claiming that they were using magical powers to do bad things.
It was more based on
fraud, that's what they got her
it?
Under.
It was the so after this Witchcraft Act, they changed it to be more against fraud, because it's like, well, witch magic isn't real, so they're actually committing fraud. And so she was just the last person under the witchcraft. And she was a spiritualist medium.
And she had the military thought that she might be about to reveal plans for D-Day, didn't she? Which
because basically she'd been in touch with a deceased sailor from a ship which had been sunk, that hadn't been announced publicly. Yeah. So she knew about that. It got back to the wartime government people.
Yeah.
Who would it be? I don't know, war office?
The military intelligence officers found out
somehow.
And
but
they
actually
thought that he had been giving her information from beyond the grave about Dido.
But actually what in fact happened was that they'd been in contact, they'd sent letters of condolence to the families of the sailors.
Yeah.
And said, please don't tell anyone about this, though.
Yeah, or about but, that Dido business.
Yeah, so, like, she, obviously a member of his family had gone to her and probably given her that letter, you know, or given her some information.
Yeah.
And that's how that happened. So, you know, I feel a bit bad because I think she probably was actually a fraud.
She charged people for these meetings with the dead as well. Yes. So she was indicted for after a fake seance and a fake spiritual manifestation. So she was had up for two counts of conspiracy to contravene the Witchcraft Act 1735, two of obtaining money by false pretences, and three of public mischief.
I like the fact that, so this happened, this was 1944, so a couple of years after.
43.
Oh, was it 43? Oh.
She was indicted in 43, and there was one more in 44, literally a year later.
Yeah.
Which was Rebecca York of Forest Gate in East London. Oh. She was the last, I think.
I got my numbers wrong.
She was convicted on seven counts of pretending to cause the spirits of deceased people to be present. So that would have been probably people wanting to see their war dead, I would imagine.
And again, it's interesting that it was more around like spiritualism and the paranormal rather than like actual what we would consider witchcraft. Yeah. Our Malvina Sphinx might have been the last like actual witch.
Yes, I think so. Because these other two, in fact, there was another one kind of, there was a threat of it in 1950. Again, that was the Fraudulent Mediums Act, which is a bit of a bizarre one because basically all the mediums that now practice, and let's not get into that, but all the mediums that practice would have been had up for this.
Mm-hmm.
You wouldn't have been able to do this publicly. No. So, yeah, as you say, you're completely right. That Our Lady, Malvina, she was such a witch's name, isn't it?
It's God a bless great her. Well name. Done, like, I did look into where that came from because I was wondering with the mob thing, I was like, oh, maybe she was like, I don't know. Italian. I'm probably being very stereotypical, but maybe Italian.
Isn't it Italian?
I think it might be, actually.
But I do actually wonder again, because my granddad was in the war, albeit in the UK, fitting wires, so not particularly a huge hero, but he absolutely
every way accounted
hated the Germans and the Japanese, who were perfectly, you know, nice people in the UK, and you know, but he hated them.
Mm.
And you wonder if she did have Italian ancestry. I mean, if he had been fighting in Italy, he's not with her.
But you know, but Malvina, the name Malvina is actually of Celtic origin.
Oh, okay.
So it's similar to Malvina or something else, but it means like chieftain or something. So because I was like, oh yeah, that would actually make perfect. I didn't really think about like the Italy kind of First World War ties, but actually that could make a lot of sense if she had like Italian heritage.
Mm.
Interesting.
Yeah. It's and did you, the other thing I quite like, which is a little bit random, so talking about that 1736 Parliament Act, which was when the laws against witchcraft were repealed, and you could still impose fines or imprisonment on people who claimed to be able to use magical powers. So that became law on June the 24th, 1736, and the only figure who offered significant opposition was a chap called James Erskine, who believed in witchcraft and kind of rejected the act. And Robert Walpole, who was the de facto prime minister of the country, said it marked him out as an eccentric verging on the insane. And the only reason I mention any of this is, of course, Robert Walpole was a Norfolk boy born in Houghton in 1676, whose sister, of course, was Dorothy Walpole, or as we know her better, the Brown Lady of Raynham Hall.
So it's all connected, Stacia. It's all connected.
It's a small world, isn't it? It's all connected to Norfolk because we are the best.
Yes. But I was thinking about, so just going back to Helen Duncan a little bit. So when she was arrested, arrested during a seance when she had like mid ectoplasm like coming out. Mm. I wonder if there's anyone like now who like does like Victorian-y. I know this wasn't Victorian, but does those seances, because I would frigging love to see that. Like, because they follow a cheesecloth. Like, how do you even do that? And then there's pictures of her with, like, these cheesecloth, like, spirits with, like, faces, like, masks.
Yeah.
Terrifying. But is there anyone that does it?
Do you think that part of this worked on the basis that people's eye care was not as good as it is today?
Maybe, to be fair, because without my glasses.
I know. Right? Well, exactly. I see spirits now, and it is, in fact, just an actual person.
Yeah.
I haven't got my contacts in.
And if it's dark, and then yeah. I would just absolutely love to see it.
Oh, like, amazing.
So if anyone knows of anyone who does this.
Or maybe we should learn how to do this.
I don't know. It would make me gag.
What, the cheesecloth coming out of your mouth?
Yeah. Because it's like something that's like anymore, a lot.
Would you? You'd be using AI.
It's no fun, is it, though?
But it would look fun. It'd be fun. We'll work on that. In the story, I also found another East Dereham case, which had come up earlier in the dock, which was in 1887.
Oh, okay. I thought you meant like earlier that day.
Earlier that day when someone got done for stealing a hammer. No, nothing exciting. And it was author Augustus Jessop who told of an East Dereham coroner who'd been called to look at the death of a woman found dead in bed in the 1880s. And she had got charms around her neck, which she had bought from the local cunning man who was called Claypole and was actually a farmer and what else did he do? He had a farm. He was a blacksmith.
I think he was a toad witch.
Yeah, he had a sideline in magic.
Mm.
And had been kind of quietly providing, help to the to East Dereham people for ages. But it was this case where he was found out because the husband of the woman who had died, when they asked, "Are you going to bury her with these?" And he said yes, because she kind of thought that they were working. Clearly they weren't. And spoiler, because she's dead. But the coroner then literally was so furious that he cut them off her neck in front of him.
That's really harsh.
Refused to let him have them. And when he examined the bag later, there were 5 squares of paper with zodiac symbols, hieroglyphs, numbers, scripture that she had had on these bits of paper.
I hope that one of them said, "I curse the person who cuts this off."
He does this. I know. But he sent a message to Claypole. In fact, he sent a letter to Claypole, the coroner, because he had just done a sale for him of a farm. So he knew him. He was a client.
Hmm.
And he said, "If I hear any more about this, then there will be trouble." So it all stopped. 2 years later, he meets up with a man in a pub. And the man said, "Oh, I was Claypole's apprentice," by which he doesn't mean like sorcerer's apprentice. He means blacksmith apprentice. Oh. And he told of the day that Claypole gets this letter, and him and Claypole dig a massive great pit and bury all their magical books in East Dereham, which is still there.
Somewhere to, like, that's like a proper treasure hunt.
A proper treasure hunt with like all this magic seeping into the soil near East Dereham for Melvina Spinks to find later on.
Oh my gosh, maybe she did find it then.
Maybe she found it, but there was a huge pit full of his books. And there's another witness further along the line who said that when they used to go to Claypole for help, he would reach behind this huge collection, this library of books. And the chap who saw them said they were like no other books he'd ever seen.
Oh, wow.
So they are in the soil in East Dereham. But yes, and I wondered, or there is a rumour that the Claypole name went on to be the name of Timothy Claypole, who of course was in Rent-A-Ghost.
Oh.
Do you remember Rent-A-Ghost?
Of course I remember Rent-A-Ghost.
Oh my God.
Absolutely loved it. It was so good. I wonder, I bet you can get it on something to watch now.
Well, apparently they actually deleted loads of it because they thought that the ones that existed were enough.
It was amazing.
And I suggested to Shiva before we came on air that we should start doing a cabaret act at which we only perform one song. And that song is the rent a ghost thing.
But I can't sing, so stations are not running.
Can you imagine though? Like I said, it should be our fight song. So like the stage should be dark. We should be sitting there, and suddenly, readily over the airwaves comes, you know, if your mansion house needs haunting, just call Rent a Ghost. We got spooks and ghouls and freaks and fools at Rent a Ghost. Hear the phantom of the opera sing a haunting melody. Remember, what you see is not a mystery, but come on,
Rent a Ghost. That was so good.
So I really feel that this is our future.
That was really good.
Yeah. Oh, I'm sure Laura, once she hears me, she'll be like, right, okay, we need to get this band on the road, and we're gonna just do Rent a Ghost.
But with Laura's music as well, like playing along with it, I think that would be brilliant.
Oh my god, it'd be amazing, wouldn't it? I urge you all to Google the full lyrics to that song.
I definitely will.
And they were written by the lovely Michael Staniforth, who played Timothy Claypole and sadly died when he was 44 of AIDS.
Oh.
And he was, I just loved him. I felt yeah. I might marry him. That oh. was obviously work for me.
I just remember it being so, like, even though they were ghosts, it was just really nice. Like, I wasn't ever scared of it, ever.
No.
Like, I just loved it.
And you can see how much has been ripped off from them, can't you?
Yeah, you can definitely see there's, like, inspiration pulled from there.
Yeah, I mean, fair enough. You know, it had its moment, but you kind of think, yeah. And did you know that the uniform that jesters wear is called motley?
So, like, motley crew or, like, jester crew.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's interesting.
So there you go. Yeah, really interesting. So that's my Claypole down the long track. Nonsense.
That's an interesting one. Did you find... So one of the things... We are, like, running out of time on our recording.
Sorry, that's me singing.
That's all right. There were a few of the bits that I wanted to, like, touch on. So we'll see how we go.
Spin through.
So something I found really interesting was that... So during the First World War, there was an increase in the interest in kind of the spiritualist movement. And during the Second World War, there was as well. And now there's obviously a real interest in, like, exploring paganism and stuff. And is it that times of, like, high stress?
Yes. I'm kind of 100% certain about this. Mm-hmm. I think when you can't make sense of the answers that you're given about the world, you look for them elsewhere.
Mm. And then there was another kind of thought that I had, which was, like, I can see during the Second World War, so there's all these, like, conspiracy theories and rumors and films and comics and stuff based on how the Nazis were obsessed with the occult. And I was like, this is going to be an excellent topic to discuss. I mean, I've read a lot of Hellboy, and the whole basis how Hellboy came to Earth was he was, like, pulled from hell through a ritual performed by Nazis. And I think it's really interesting that, like, I don't know how much of that is true. And the more I did, like, looked into it, I was like, I think a lot of this is, like...
I don't think Raiders of the Lost Ark would lie.
Well, Indiana Jones was going to be one of my reference points. But, you know, like, how much of it is, like, created by media and how much of it is actual facts, I think we can't tell
Probably
anymore.
Probably quite a lot of it is made up.
Yeah.
But I do think there was... I think there's definitely a link between the far right and the occult, sadly. Because it's just... It's culty, isn't it? It's just kind of a system whereby people have to do things. If you're talking occult, I think occult is very much led by a big force, isn't it? Whereas anything on the edges is a lot more kind of personal. And, you know, I don't think the Nazis would have been interested in hedge witchery or kind of, you know, doing some nice things with flowers, would they? They were trying to summon the devil if they
Sorry,
were doing
everyone,
anything.
Peanuts on
but yeah, we
one.
should look into that more, definitely.
Yeah, and I just thought it was interesting, like, in the following years, like, after, I guess during the war, people wouldn't have been aware of that, but after the war, like, during the 60s and 70s, again, there was a real interest in, like, paganism, but then you also had, like, the Hammer horror stuff, which really drew on that fear of the occult and witchcraft. And so I can see how people would tie together like the Nazis who committed like some of the most atrocious kind of war crimes ever, it would be like, well, obviously they must have done something occult, because occult is really bad and the Nazis were really bad, so they must have been like, I don't know, I feel like there's something there.
I think
like,
there
to talk
were
about.
I think there were definitely experiments conducted by the Nazis, because they loved an experiment, didn't they? So I can't see that they wouldn't have experimented with anything to reach out to a darker force. That doesn't necessarily mean they believed it, but I think they were, you know, they were quite thorough, weren't they, the Nazis? They did things kind of, you know, nastily, but quite well. So I'd imagine they probably did. I'm sure I remember that they had experiments which involved trying to bring forth, you know, a different kind of power. Because if you look at the experiments they did, the physical ones, some of that stuff was crazy, but they just, they were very single-minded about testing.
Yeah. So I guess why wouldn't they try the occult if they were trying everything else?
We don't like
them. But I guess, like, just going back to our East, like to Malvina and that fear of witchcraft, I don't think that, like, I don't think there was any propaganda, like, at the time. I don't think necessarily he would have known about, I think it was more of a personal, like, they were just pissing each other off, weren't they?
I think they were, but I think in living memory, there would have been these people that people would have gone to. Maybe she was a cunning woman. We don't know how old she was. We don't know.
Well, I did find, like, a little kind of a tiny, like, on the 1921 census, there was a Malvina Spinks living in West Toft. And she was born in 1875. And then I found another, like, little kind of thing of someone found a Malvina, which was born in 1895 in the Stanford Battle area, which is basically pretty much West Toft.
Yeah, near there.
I'm wondering if that is the same person. So she actually lived in West Toft, maybe moved to East Dereham for whatever reason. But that's all I can find out about her. I can't find anything else. I did the find a grave to see if I could find where she was buried or anything like that, but nothing came
maybe
up.
Buried with the books.
Maybe. We need to do a treasure hunt, don't we, for those books.
Please let us find the books. That'd be incredible. We've done well today.
Yeah.
Value for money today.
Yeah. We've got 1:31 left on this Zoom. Should we just keep going until it cuts us off?
Until it ends. Until the very bitter end.
What's the last one
I
today, Stacia?
I like the story. I know I always say it, but I just think it's nice to look at these ones that show that these beliefs are still, were still about, are still about.
They are. They are still about.
About, weren't they? I think. But we hope if you come to see us in this month now, that you enjoy it, and we will look forward to seeing you soon.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
We've got like less than a minute, so... Oh, it's nice to talk to you.
It's so nice to talk to you.
I have got some America
it...
presents for you. Maybe I'll drop them around. One of them
I
is like edible.
This bit in so they know that I'm getting presents.
I will.